Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Hello and thank you for joining us for episode 4 of The Backside of Water, a podcast that delves into the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. I'm Harrison Ownby.
And I'm Alex Stewart. And we are proud this episode to cover the most dangerous, thrilling, and elaborate attraction in Adventureland. But before we start, I want to tell you a funny personal story about my...
Halten Sie her, Alex. Yes, it is I, infamous Nazi Heinrich von Faust. I am here to steal your podcast and take it to mein Führer.
Never. I'll die before I let Hitler get his filthy hands on this podcast!
And I'll die twice before I let Hitler get his filthy hands on this podcast, too!
Harry, why do you always have to one-up me?
Well, Al, I guess you don't hate Hitler as much as I do. I mean, I'd die a thousand deaths to stop Hitler.
Okay, you know I hate Hitler. If anybody hates Hitler, it's me, but you're one-upping me, and it's annoying. You only get to die one time. And yeah, I mean, sure, if I had multiple times.
Enough! It's curtains for you meddling fools!
Look out, Al!
All right, you Nazi coward, let's see what you're made of!
Give him a left, now a right! Jab, jab!
Oof! Mein block has been knocked off! But you're too late here, Alex. Mein assistant, Dr. Meadle Schnitzelhut, has already stolen the source of this podcast's power. The mysterious emerald of 9 goddesses.
Von Faust, you don't know what you've done.
I have it right here in mine hands, Von Faust. Shall we open it and take a look?
No! Shut your eyes, Al!
It's beautiful.
Ich bin ein Skeleton!
Al? You okay?
Yeah. That was close. Whew, it looks like Hitler won't be getting his hands on the backside of water or the mysterious Emerald of the 9 Goddesses, which is the source of its power anytime soon.
Oh, whew. Well, let's put this emerald back in the museum, where it belongs. Well, folks, if you haven't guessed by the opening sketch, we're proud to cover the Indiana Jones adventure. This attraction is another one of our favorites, and we were blown away when we learned the ins and outs of it for this episode. We have so much to cover, so let's whip through it.
The history of the Indiana Jones adventure actually begins back in 1984 with a meeting between George Lucas and Michael Eisner. Eisner, the head honcho at Disney at the time, had set up a tour of the Imagineering facilities with Lucas, and during the meeting implored Lucas to develop some ideas for Disney theme parks. Well, Lucas obliged and began working with the company pretty closely. From this meeting, both Captain EO and Star Tours were born, as was a long relationship with George Lucas. Eventually, Lucas would team up with Disney again to create an Indiana Jones-themed stunt show at Walt Disney World's MGM Studios, now Disney's Hollywood Studios, which is apparently changing again. They also had an Indiana Jones-themed roller coaster adventure over in Disney Paris. Now, both of these indie attractions had the thrill, the explosions, and no shortage of bullwhip cracking, but what they did lack was a solid story. Knowing that Lucas and Disney are some of the most notoriously creative storytellers in Hollywood, both parties understood what a travesty it would be if they never got a chance to create a story-driven attraction at one of the parks. After much thought, Lucas and Disney both came up with a phenomenal story that created the backbone for a legendary story-based immersive attraction. Let's roll the backstory newsreel, Harry.
Let me see if I can find this newsreel here. Okay, all right, here it is. Let's get it rolling.
The research of Professor Indiana Jones took him deep into India's Lost Delta, where he discovered the ruins of the legendary Temple of the Forbidden Eye. At the dig site, Dr. Jones dodged deadly booby traps and decoded mysterious inscriptions to discover the story of Mara, a powerful but dangerous ancient deity. These inscriptions promised unimaginable riches, eternal youth, or visions of the future to the pure of heart, but contained a dire warning. Mortals who gazed into the all-seeing eyes of Mara would surely pay with their lives. Funding for the dig came up short. but Indiana Jones' friend Sala saw opportunity to make quick profit. I know I'm only a narrator, but I heard that Sala also has a very expensive weakness for Turkish opera, but you didn't hear that from me. Undaunted by the frightening warnings and booby traps around the site, Sala began to organize tours through the accursed temple. To prevent foolish mortals from looking into the eyes of Mara, he set up a clever array of mirrors. What could possibly go wrong? Tourists suddenly started to vanish with no trace. The fearless Indiana Jones ventured into the temple to investigate and has never been seen since. Intrepid explorers, enter into this forbidden temple only if you dare to find out what happened to Dr. Jones and the missing tourists. Heed the ancient warnings. Do not look into the eyes of Mara, and you may have a small chance of survival. The adventure of a lifetime is before you.
This story is completely integrated into the attraction, queue, and Jungle Cruise, but before the Imagineers settled on this story, they considered several other options. Actually, you can see original concept art for the Indiana Jones adventure at the Disney Gallery located over the Pirates of the Caribbean in New Orleans Square. Early attraction concepts included a high-speed minecart adventure through a temple. Near the queue entrance today, there's a small mining car that was a prop in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. The mining car is near the Mercedes-Benz troop transport truck, which was the actual vehicle from the desert chase scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Just blow it up! Blow it back to God.
Another early concept was to make an Indiana Jones walkthrough adventure. And when I first learned they considered a walkthrough adventure, I was surprised because it sounds very un-Indiana Jonesy. Indy's an action hero, so he's always running, jumping, fighting, swinging. I mean, what were they thinking with a walkthrough adventure? Indiana Jones never saunters. But they integrated this concept into the queue, and it's brilliant. The queue is an immersive experience where you enter the space around the dig site, complete with Dr. Jones' office, booby traps, and secret Maravik inscriptions. When the attraction opened in 1995, the park provided Maravik decoder cards for guests to read the ancient inscriptions. While these cards are no longer available, you can ask a cast member in any shop in Adventureland, and they can provide you with a photocopy of the cards. The cards are also easy to find with the internet on your phone.
Oh, a novel concept.
Ding, 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 ding. Just look up Maravik decoder. There are tons of messages to decode in the queue, and if you're in the park, we would love it if you Instagrammed us some pictures of Maravik. We can apply our expertise and decode it for the field of archaeology, because that's what we've always said at the backside of water. The university comes first.
From the day this podcast was begun,
we were firmly ensconced in university tradition. Anyway, there was another idea that Imagineers briefly considered, and it is horrific and odious, and some of our more sensitive listeners may want to tune out. But in the name of fearless journalism, we're going to stare into the abyss. They considered repurposing the Jungle Cruise as a transport to take guests to the Temple of the Forbidden Eye. That's right. As a guest, you would wait to board the Jungle Cruise, which would motor you over to the temple, where you would wait again to board the Indiana Jones adventure. I'm glad they opted not to do that and respected the Jungle Cruise's legacy. I have a feeling they would have had to reopen the Jungle Cruise when they realized the black magic of Mara beleaguered Disney execs for their impure hearts. So instead, they rethemed the Jungle Cruise to take place within the context of the Indiana Jones adventure.
If you're curious about that retheming, just jump back over to our last episode of the podcast, The Jungle Cruise, and you'll hear the entire story that was created to coincide with the Indiana Jones adventure.
That's great advice, Al. So when the Imagineers finally settled on a drive-through adventure, the journey was just beginning. Memory Harp.
Lucas and Disney had the story ironed out and the ride concept was fully cooked. Now, all they had to do was the simple task of building the attraction. For those not aware, that last part about it being simple was dripping with sarcasm.
It was horribly not simple to build, from what I understand.
Yeah, the attraction was going to be a massive undertaking for the company. But they weren't worried because they had an ace up their sleeve by the name of Tony Baxter. Baxter was a Disney veteran of Disneyland by this time, starting out as an ice cream scooper in the park. But eventually he would go on to become a modern Disney legend, responsible for dreaming up attractions such as Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, Splash Mountain, and the reboot of Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, to name a few. Baxter was tasked to help oversee the building of this ancient, mysterious, and cursed temple that would occupy a space in Adventureland. Now, this wasn't just a throw it up overnight and turn the lights on kind of endeavor. No. It would end up taking a team of over 100 Imagineers a total of 7 years to bring the Indiana Jones adventure from a concept on a page to a crowd-pleasing attraction in the park. Constructing this massive 50,000 square foot building that housed the attraction itself and the nearly 1/2 mile queue area would take the work of more than 400 laborers working around the clock to create one of the most ambitious, creative undertakings in the park up to that point. It was so ambitious, in fact, that they actually had to reroute the winding rivers of the Jungle Cruise as well as the monorail track. They also bulldozed the beloved Eeyore parking lot as well to make space for this attraction. Not only was the Indiana Jones Adventure an ambitious construction project, it was also extremely ambitious in regard to theming and decoration. Within the attraction, there are over 168,000 square feet of hand-carved surfaces and more than 1,995 skulls housed within the attraction as well. It's kind of funny because I was talking with a cast member friend of mine, who I was picking their brain about this attraction before we wrote the script for this episode, and she told me that there are actually now only 1,994 skulls, as one of the cast members accidentally stepped on a skull and broke it.
I got a question about the skull.
Yeah.
How come they haven't replaced it?
That's a great question, and I have no answer for that. I just thought it was really funny that they decided not to. Maybe it's because somebody hasn't died. And they just haven't had a chance to get a skull from a real human being.
That's probably it. Nobody's died since somebody stepped on that skull.
Now, the reason they chose that number 1995 for the skulls was to honor the year the attraction was opened. When it was all said and done, it cost Disney between $1 and $200 million to complete the Indiana Jones Adventure. In my opinion, I think they should have named it Indiana Jones and the Ceiling of Debt.
Can you imagine that ride? You're just going through and seeing Indy being like, taxes!
I'm Why being did... fiscally irresponsible!
Why did it have to be taxes? So finally, after almost a decade, the attraction was ready to open in honor of the 40th anniversary of the park. It soft opened on March 3rd, 1995, with celebrities such as George Lucas, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Dan Aykroyd, and Carrie Fisher riding the attraction. The Disney Channel also produced an hour-long TV segment called The Making of Disneyland's Indiana Jones Adventure, which featured Karen Allen and John Rhys Davies. I had to Google how to pronounce that name, because I've been saying it Rhys Davies, because I'm very talented at mispronouncing things.
This is also coming from the guy who thinks that the creator of A Prairie Home Companion is named Garrison Keillor.
That's what it's spelled like. Then on March 4th, 1995, the ride opened The ride opened to the public.
Into the arms the next day. Into the legs the day after that.
Pelvises only. This is a pelvis only ride. So please detach the rest of your body from your pelvis.
I can't wait for my pelvis to ride that attraction.
Then oh my
god. Pelvises
gosh.
Were drooling on the day it opened.
This is okay.
Let's
wow.
get serious.
This is where it just is the slow descent into madness that is every episode. Okay.
Tell us about the lines, Harry.
Well, the lines were ghastly, Alex. People all waiting 6 hours to ride the attraction. People all calling it Temple of the Endless Line. You know, if you're that kind of fan, I applaud your dedication, but I'm more the type who would sip Dole Whip floats, stuff churros in my face, and shake my head at how bananas this was. Then I'd realize that I wanted a frozen banana because at Disney parks, I eat like an unsupervised 8-year-old. Still, guests that rode that day experienced something unlike any attraction before. Alex, tell us about the ride experience.
With gusto! Once you've made your way through the perilous queue area, you climb into a military transport vehicle to tour the famous Temple of Mara. These vehicles are insane, by the by. Each vehicle is essentially a mobile motion simulator, much like the one you ride on Star Tours, uniquely reacting with the terrain, guest count, and vehicles in front and behind each vehicle. Fun fact, with the way the attraction is programmed, a guest actually has over 160,000 unique movement combinations that they have available in each vehicle. So you're never going to get the same ride twice. That's so crazy.
It's amazing technology. In fact, Disney patented it. It's called Enhanced Motion Vehicles, and it's also available at Dinosaur, the ride in Animal Kingdom. There's also each car knows where it is in relation to the other cars. So sometimes it might be slightly slower, your ride experience, because somebody is taking a longer time to board. So I sometimes read Yelp reviews and stuff like, oh, they made the ride slower. No, they didn't. It's different every time.
Well, and it's amazing because for safety reasons, the attraction is super, super sensitive to that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
That's why you'll always see Indiana Jones down constantly, is because those cars, if they encroach the ride radius of the car in front of it, it will just shut the entire thing down.
Yep, and if you unbuckle a seatbelt, it shuts it all down. There's a million ways to shut this ride down. So
now, back to the story. Everything is fine and dandy for tourists riding through this mystical temple, so long as nobody in your vehicle makes the stupid mistake of looking into the eyes of the idol. Thankfully, Indy has nicely decided to place some mirrors up for you so you can see around the corner to make sure you're not looking into Mara's eyes, as Harry mentioned before. Now, once you've passed this wall of mirrors, you're faced with three separate chamber opportunities. Each chamber houses a different fortune that you'll receive. The first chamber houses infinite riches and is filled with mounds of gold that will fill the entire space with golden light. The second chamber leads to infinite youth. The waters that bring eternal life fill the room with a brilliant blue glow. And finally, the third chamber grants you the ability to see the future, its roof covered in a blanket of stars. Now, I personally didn't know any of this backstory before doing research for this episode, so I always thought that we were entering into a giant room filled with random nothingness. But now that I know each chamber is filled with a different form of reward, that makes this attraction so much cooler for me. Now, the crazy thing is, each chamber is actually the same room. That's right, before you round the corner, the wall of chamber doors will randomly switch, so it looks like you aren't taking the same door over and over. Once the chamber door has been decided by the program, the show elements in the chamber switch instantly to correspond with whichever door your vehicle rode through. Once you enter the tunnel, someone is daft enough to look into the dang eyes of Mara and screws everyone out of their glorious reward that led them to this temple in the first place. Mara gets supremely angry and throws your vehicle way off course towards your imminent demise. Thanks to whoever decided to look into those eyes.
It was never me.
Before you're thrown out of the chamber, you run into, you guessed it, Indiana Jones himself. But he doesn't look much like the Indy we've come to know and love. And there's a reason for that. For some strange reason, Harrison Ford decided not to sign off on being forever immortalized as an audio animatronic character. So the Imagineers had to create their own version of Indy. That's right. The Indiana Jones you see inside the attraction is not intended to look or sound like Harrison Ford. I don't know about you, Harry, but when Disney finally builds the Backside of Water podcast attraction like they've been promising us,
yeah.
I have no problem with them turning me into an audio animatronic.
That's fair. I would have some conditions. I would need to have the head of an ox and the feet of a golden mercury with the wings. But other than that, it's cool. It's cool.
I actually would just enjoy for them to convert my body into an animatronic body, kind of like a RoboCop or Richard Simmons thing.
Well, I didn't realize Richard Simmons was audio animatronic. That explains the energy levels, I guess, huh?
The energy levels are out of this world! Anyway, once you're thrown out of the temple, you will be led first into the delightfully named Tunnel of Torment.
That's my metal band, by the way.
That's actually my group on WoW. Here you'll see a bunch of skeletons and such. In this area, you'll also find Bones, an official hidden Mickey. Bones is a skeleton wearing a pair of Mickey ears with the name Bones embroidered into the hat. Really?
That's quaint.
It is. It's cute, isn't it? So after this calcifying experience, you're going to see a lot of bugs crawling around on the walls. Then you'll pass through the gates of doom, cross a creepy rope bridge, and enter into a snake room, where you're going to encounter a giant cobra. Now, in the attraction, this cobra is really intimidating. But once, while I was killing time before my Jungle Cruise shift backstage, I got to see that cobra just chilling out in the Southern California sunlight, and it kind of lost its flair for me. But then it viciously ate a cast member, and that's when I truly saw its power.
Wow!
After you pass the snakes, you will go past the Caverns of Bubbling Death. Once you pass that, you'll go into a dark room. Yep, that's all. It's just dark. Now, there's a few of these show scenes that just seem to be dark rooms, and there's a reason for that. To put it simply, it's due to lack of funding. You have to remember that this attraction costs a ton of money, and when the money runs out, it really runs out. So they simply left these rooms dark, and filled them with bat or mice noises. Good way to cover up those vacant rooms, I guess. Harry, I heard that's what your mom did to your bedroom when you moved out. Is that true?
Kind of, except she actually just had a ton more kids, and they took my space. But
she dresses each one of them as mice and bats in the morning. Yeah. Come to me, my precious vermin.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe that's... At least they didn't go with that route on the Indiana Jones. It's like, all right, Imagineers, let's just fill this place up with kids. Instead of a dark room. They're free. They'll just let them roam around.
So after you ride through a room where you're nearly made into a pincushion by poison darts being shot at you, you round the corner and see our friend Indiana Jones dangling from a frayed rope. That's when you're nearly crushed by a giant boulder that begins rolling straight toward you. A boulder that can be moved around by hand. Yep, the boulder itself is actually so light that cast members are able to move it by hand. And it actually isn't even rolling toward you. I know, it's kind of disappointing. The walls beside your vehicle are actually what is moving in the room while your vehicle stays perfectly still. Was that one of those killing the magic kind of facts? I hope not. After you narrowly escape the boulder, you meet Indy yet again, who congratulates you for getting out alive. Just the sheer explanation of this attraction really makes me need a mineral water and to spin a Chuck Mangione record just to calm down. Mercy!
Smooth jazz. I always right, feel like Arlen. A hero getting off that ride.
I just love the way you said that right there. There was such conviction in it.
I do. It's like one of the only times in my life I feel like I really did something riding that ride. Like I explored that temple.
I made it through the temple.
I had a pure heart, which is why I'm alive. And Bones isn't. Well, since its opening in 1995, the attraction has undergone two refurbishments. The first one, from September to December 2012, tidied up the lighting, paint, animatronics, and other effects. The second, in 2013, made Mara way angrier by digitally projecting images onto his face. Now his eyes weep black before his face turns blood red when that one mook always looks into his eyes. And that's a much more modern and creepy effect than the old eyes-turning-red backlit schlock that I was used to. Anyway, I'm excited for the future of this ride, to see what kind of amazing technology Imagineers will use next to thrill and delight guests. I love that they pushed the technological envelope in 1995, and I know they continue to challenge themselves to keep the Indiana Jones Adventure one of the most thrilling rides in Disneyland. The sense of adventure and thrill that this attraction houses is an indispensable part of the Adventureland experience.
And that's the history of the Indiana Jones Adventure. We had a ton of fun exploring this attraction. We hope you enjoyed listening. But before we go, I thought I would point out some points of interest in the world-renowned queue that we forgot to mention earlier in the episode. These artifacts will hopefully keep you entertained while waiting in the amazingly long queue area. There's a hidden Mickey in the queue that not many know about. You will find a grouping of cracks in the left wall closest to the screen in the film room that makes out the shape of a Mickey head. It's pretty hidden, but it's totally awesome when you finally see it. Also, while you're in this room, be sure to look up toward the projector that's showing the safety video. On a good day, you'll actually be able to see the Eeyore parking sign that was left up to honor the bygone parking lot. Finally, once you leave the film room, keep a lookout for the Mickey and Minnie Mouse hiding on the front cover of a magazine in Indy's office. It's also rumored that quite a few artifacts in that office are actual props from various Indy films. But I don't know for sure. I personally like to think that's true, just for the nostalgia's sake. And that's all the time we have for this episode. Thanks for joining us here at the Backside of Water. Please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and leave us a review because I'm awesome and I hate Nazis more than Harry does.
And follow the Backside of Water on Instagram because Al tries to post pictures of sacred artifacts but is so inept with technology that he just posts blurry close-ups of his knees.
Look at this one. I'm pretty sure that this is a monkey god.
That's a good knee.
Oh, no, it's just my knee.
Anyway, next episode we'll be covering Tarzan's treehouse. I'm very proud that I didn't say Tarzan for... If you know my backstory, that's a real struggle for me.
Your backstory of water. Until next time, as you exit,
please watch your step and watch your head.
If you happen to miss your step and hit your head, please watch your language.
Goodbye.